Today's show is sponsored by Howl.fm. You guys start 2017 with a bang with the entire Comedy Bang Bang live tour on Howl. You can binge on 36 episodes taped in the US, Australia, the UK, featuring Scott Aukerman, Paul F. Tompkins, Lauren Lapkus, John Gabris, and other guests. There are also 5 best of episodes where you can relive the best moments from the tour. I always love the year-end best of episodes, so it sounds like that is this, but for the tour, so I'm going to go spend the weekend listening to that instead of doing something productive. In total, it's over 50 hours of new Comedy Bang Bang episodes to start your year off right. And to listen to the Comedy Bang Bang live tour, as well as over 200 hours of exclusive mini-series, as well as the ad-free version of the podcast, go to howl.fm/crack to start your free one-month trial. Once again, that's howl.fm/crack to get started. The internet, and welcome to another episode of the Cracked Podcast. My name is Jack O'Brien. I'm the editor-in-chief of Cracked, and this week we're listening to Reality by Grimes. Grimes's music always feels like a great night or week or experience collapsed into a single bittersweet memory, the way all these amazing elements come kind of flooding in at the same time and sort of churned together. Anyways, this song, Reality, seems to be about coming back to reality after a relationship with insane highs and lows, which is appropriate because this week we're talking about romantic comedies, the only movie genre where love and romantic relationships are the explicit subject of the movies. You know, murder gets action, horror, war, most westerns, mysteries, 90% of the runtime of nature documentaries. But romantic love, the reason any of us are here, and the subject of, I'd say, at least 50% of all songs ever recorded, only gets one movie genre, which is a little crazy, right? Not to stereotype, but there are probably people listening to this right now who will never even murder a single person. But you'll all probably experience a romantic relationship of one sort or another. And not only does romantic love only get one genre, but that genre only tells the story of a very specific part of romantic relationships. The beginning, just over and over, we see them meet, decide whether or not they want to fuck each other, and eventually decide they do. That's like the first few weeks of real relationships, and also probably the least interesting part to watch in the real world, since it tends to be the most conflict-free. So in order to make it somewhat interesting, romantic comedies add a bunch of contrived conflicts that never happen in reality. One person mishears the other or places a bet that they can make the other one love or hate them, or one of them is John Cusack. And there are also these things that rom-coms seem to believe are necessary parts of romantic relationships, like the big dramatic gesture or singing a song with the whole school marching band, or holding a boombox over his head outside her house that is playing the song that was playing the first time they had sex. Creepy. Climbing up her fire escape and trying to convince her to marry you. For being, quote, chick flicks, a term no doubt coined by women who constantly refer to themselves and each other as chicks. For being the fantasy of chicks, romantic comedies seem to operate on dude logic a lot of the time. Like the idea that women just want a man who will take charge and tell them they love them louder and more dramatically than other guys. Or the idea of love at first sight. That sounds romantic, but the idea that you can fall in love with someone by looking at them seems actually to play to the things men value in a romantic partner, aka looks. It's almost enough to make you start to think that the predominantly white guy community of writers and directors Hollywood allows to make studio movies don't understand how romantic love works from a woman's perspective. Yeah, if you watch the movies, keeping in mind that they're probably at least written and maybe written and directed by men, it makes a lot more sense. Things like Kate Hudson looking at Matthew McConaughey and saying, "I'm going to destroy you," under her breath at the beginning of their relationship in How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. That movie was directed by a 49-year-old man. Or you might notice that the things that are seen as romantic are the sort of things that guys tend to think should get them laid, but not the things that actually get them laid, like just being nice tends to be directly redeemable for sex in movies. We've all heard guys ask why the girl they like doesn't like nice guys. I think, asked that question about girls I had a crush on in high school. It just means, why isn't being nice to her enough to make her want to do sex with me? But not in movies. Romantic comedies are the one place that just being nice works. Only one guy in the whole movie has thought of the idea, be nice to this breathtakingly gorgeous woman. Her boyfriend and all the guys who try to pick her up at the bar either mean to her face for no apparent reason or just transparently sleazy. It's almost like women in romantic comedies are just waiting around for the right guy to come along and offer nicely to marry them. Anyways, that's what we're talking about today. I'll be back at the end for some footnotes. Talk to you then. Studio by Jamie Loftus, who is the host of a very funny podcast called The Bechdel Cast. Is that right?
Yeah.
Did I say that right?
Yeah.
And she's also a very funny stand-up and animator, and also has a really funny piece on thenewyorker.com, which is very cool. Welcome.
Hi.
We have a whole section at our office that's full of candy.
Yeah, and she's got a handful.
Jamie collected of all like the delicious things there. She collected Good and Plenty, which is like.
Oh, is it Good and Plenty?
No, those are Mike and Ike's.
They are Mike and Ike's, right?
Good and really? Plenty are the fruit ones.
No. Good and Plenty are licorice.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
These are definitely licorice. Oh, Mike and Ike's are the fruit ones.
No.
See, I felt insecure about that choice the second I made it. I'm like, I know this isn't the best option.
I just assumed they were good, but
well,
yeah.
I mean, if we're
licorice is terrible.
Just being unlike the other girls, I go for the licorice snack.
That was it. Yeah, it was a unique surprise.
Yeah,
so.
This is my first manic pixie dream girl. Like the Smiths play softly in the background. Right. I'm like, actually, I like Good and Plenty.
And Soren's here.
Yeah, hey.
Who is an editor at Cracked, teen heartthrob, and the voice of his generation.
Thank you.
Yes. That was just spontaneous. And we're going to talk about rom-coms. What does that stand for? Now we're going to talk about romantic comedies, which I don't think we've ever devoted an entire episode to rom-coms. I think we've touched on them in the past and all the stuff they get wrong. But in justifying this episode to myself, I was kind of asking the question, who gives a shit? Why are we doing this? And I think of all the subjects that they make a lot of movies about, love and romance is probably the one that people are most likely to actually experience in their lives, depending on who you are.
I've had a lot of like Jack Reacher style escapades, but
right.
Yeah. But not everyone can.
Most people.
Yeah. Most people, yeah. I'm not, most girls.
Right.
I
not
eat
six,
the good
eight
and plenty.
Ex-Marines like yourself. That's so amazing that they were like, okay, the character in the book, 6'8", ex-Marine, who should we cast? Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise, everybody's favorite everyman.
Favorite tall everyman.
Right. Yeah, and I feel like movies get romance about as wrong as they get anything. I think. I don't know what shooting people actually looks like, but it's got to be somewhat similar to what it looks like in the movies, right?
I don't know. I think that...
Jamie, you would know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. As an ex-Marine, they get it all wrong.
Right. Okay.
It's mostly a foot-based operation.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a good analogy to, like, the way that somebody, when they get hit with a bullet, they fly backwards. Or,
right.
Like, their arms tear off and things like that. That's a really good analogy for how wrong. As wrong as movies get guns, they get love.
That doesn't happen when you get shot, you're saying.
That does not happen. No,
okay.
You, what actually happened? In my experience as an ex-Marine, that is what happens. Right.
You carry big guns.
Yeah.
You do not fuck around.
People fly when I shoot them.
they literally go flying. Yeah, right. Isn't it like people just like kind of stay still because bullets aren't exploding you?
Yeah, even though bullets are traveling at exceptional force, it's not carrying your entire body with it. You don't get pushed backwards. I've seen footage from like even... people being shot by police, and it's very clear that you just sort of crumple over.
Yeah, you can't even tell that they've been shot a lot of the time.
Yeah, as someone who watched the JFK assassination last night, that's what happens.
Really?
This is how I spend my Wednesdays. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty rough stuff.
I saw Jackie, so I'm like, I gotta watch the real assassination.
Do they use the actual footage?
They use some of it, but they don't use like the...
headshot.
The like, yeah, the grody brain stuff.
Mm.
But I found it.
That's exactly how she described it, right? It's, Jackie, yeah. Grody brain stuff.
She's like, I tried to shove his grody brain stuff back into his big dumb head.
The dumb bastard. What's the Bechdel test? I should have asked you that before.
So the Bechdel test is in a movie. There's a few, whatever, permutations of it. But if there's two women, preferably with names, who speak to each other about something other than a man... very hard for most movies to pass. So it goes back and forth on whether they have names or not. But even if like one lady is like, hey, it's raining outside, and the other one says, yeah, technically it passes.
Pass.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a pro-woman movie. Just right. kidding.
So that
just has to be one scene?
Just one. And still a ton of movies don't
percentage.
Pass it.
Really?
Like Star Wars doesn't pass it, the original ones.
Well, there aren't any women in that movie. There's one woman.
Well, that's the thing. It's like the... Princess Leia never has anyone to talk to, so there's no way it's ever going to pass.
So your podcast is sort of discussing different movies from this standpoint, among other standpoints.
Yeah, and just how like women are represented in movies in general.
And one movie that you guys have talked about on your show is Love Actually.
Ugh, yes.
So this is actually a controversial thing in our office, because there are people who really like Love Actually, mostly like... younger people. Like,
yeah, I mean, Dan O'Brien really likes it.
Rosie Keller really likes it.
I think Mandy
like people
liked
who
it.
Saw it when it came out and got really like, I'm attached to some really bad rom-coms because I saw them when I was
they were
little.
Seminal, yeah.
Yeah, but I saw it for the first time before we recorded that podcast and like,
oh really?
Boy. Yeah, it's real bad.
Oh yeah, certainly doesn't hold up. No. I would argue that like even the first time I watched it though, I really hated it too. And that's not to be like, I got in on the ground floor on hating Love Actually. It was just like, even my wife, who doesn't watch a lot of movies and is constantly surprised by tropes and genres that other people feel are well-trod, she hated it.
Well, like the most famous scene in that movie is so creepy. The one with like the note cards of...
So the scene you're talking about is, so the whole storyline, you can literally sum up each of the storylines in the movie and like, two sentences. This girl thinks her husband's best friend hates her. Her husband's best friend is like doing the video at their wedding and he won't show them the video.
What a scary video.
Right. And then she finally sees the video and it's all like focused on her, which if you just change the music cues, it would be like a horror movie scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it turns out he's obsessed. He doesn't hate her. He's obsessed with her.
Obsessed. Okay. About that tape, because that scene chills me to the bone every time I see it. Her response to seeing that he taped her that way is like, wow, my dress looks really good. I was like, oh, you guys deserve each other. You guys are both insane.
Right. Not you completely left my husband out of our wedding video.
What this a is simple like, task.
Right. Like, yeah. So the famous scene is after this encounter when she should have like run to her husband and been like, we need to talk. Instead, this guy shows up at their front door and like sends this series of messages by like holding poster board subterranean homesick blues style and like is like, tell your husband it's carols. Like all you have to do is change the music cues. It is the fucking creepiest thing in the world. But it completely charms Keira Knightley, and she gives him an innocent kiss. She rewards him with an innocent kiss, which is just the way that you want to deal with a stalker.
With a stalker. And then give him a little taste. Right.
Yeah.
And then as he walks away, he says, enough.
Does he?
Yeah. Like, as if it wasn't too on the nose. Yeah. As if it wasn't too on the nose. As he walks away, he says, enough. Like, yeah, that's all I wanted.
Now I can move on.
I have a lot to say about Love Actually.
I like Bill Nighy in Love Actually, but yeah. he's barely in it, but starts out strong. You start out with a great little Nighy vignette, and then it's all downhill from there.
Yeah. It was the first movie that taught me that the song that's number one on the charts in the UK on Christmas is a big deal for no reason. Like that's like a, that's a thing that people care about. The Christmas topper, as they call it.
The hot toppy, I think.
Hold on, the hot toppy.
Yeah. I do want to talk about some kind of random rules that seem to apply only in this genre of movies. There's the idea that like kind of putting a substance on someone's face, whether it be like flour or like a little paint that you're painting with, is like a fun way to flirt. And also like dragging them into a pool is
there's
fun.
A lot of pool dragging.
Drag into a pool or into a snowbank.
Right. Yeah. But like pulling a fully clothed adult human into a pool.
I would be furious. First
oh my God. You've ruined that person's day, or like at the very least, completely changed.
And
like,
some
what
pretty
they're...
broad assumptions on whether that person can swim or not.
Especially if we're talking post cell phone era, right. Like they can really fuck you over that way. Yeah, it'd be bad.
It's not good, but that is treated as charming. Just I guess because you need like dramatic actions, like big dramatic actions. That's the way that people profess their love to one another.
But you
I
need to scare them a little.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I love a big end of movie gesture.
Right.
It's so weird. What is the train wreck, the Amy Schumer movie? There's a really obnoxious gesture at the end of that movie too, where she's like dancing on a basketball court. And I was like, oh man.
She's like typically a feminist and she makes fun of cheerleaders for being stupid. And her boyfriend's like, oh, come on, lay off cheerleaders. They're all right. And so like, to prove that she's not a feminist anymore, I guess, she like learns a cheerleading routine. And then I did like that it culminated with her like going for the trampoline dunk and falling just because I'm a stupid
love
child.
A good pratfall. Yeah, there's a lot of pratfalls in rom-coms.
Yes, that's true.
But only by sexy people.
Yeah. Right. And it's generally the women. I mean, that's a way that you can tell that a woman is... she's the right one, is that she's just so clumsy in such a sexy way.
If like, you see a woman just eat shit on the side of the street, you've got to marry her. That's right. How it goes.
Clumsiness is like the height of attractiveness in this genre. It's also weird, and I think this is a rule. You guys actually, I think, called it out in your podcast for being just a rule about women in movies in general. But women have to like do something selfless, kind of as a profession. They need to be like, for some reason I'm thinking about in America's Sweethearts, the way that you know that Julia Roberts is the good one and not Catherine Zeta-Jones is because Julia Roberts, she's her assistant. She helps out Catherine Zeta-Jones. Or like Sandra Bullock is always a cop who's posing as like a vain person or an environmental lawyer or like
even
something.
Like Anne Hathaway in The Devil Wears Prada, like she's whatever, the sweetheart of that story, because she's like not quite sure what she's doing and like helping and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, I mean, there's like a lot of sacrifice and then I guess more like compromise. Like every career bitch themed rom-com features some sort of compromise. Like 2 weeks' notice with Sandra Bullock, you know, she's like this high-powered executive lady. And then Hugh Grant's like, chill out. And then once she chills out, we assume she's worse at her job, but she's dating someone.
So. Right. Yeah. Isn't the idea there that like she works with him and he's like a billionaire, but like a real doofus, and she basically is going to leave the company because he's like bad at his job and like he's like dragging her career down. And then like after giving 2 weeks notice and like her replacement comes and it's like an attractive girl who's flirting with him, she's like, maybe I should just stay here and torpedo my career to hang with this attractive dumb billionaire.
This big dumb idiot. We've all been there.
Right.
I will say though, in real life, Jack, there's no reason you'd know this, Jamie, but Jack's wife is a doctor, a pain management doctor, very giving of herself.
Yeah.
My wife works in climate justice.
Whoa. Like,
I don't know if that's a product of these movies that like I'm
probably.
Like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to have. I'm supposed to either have a woman who works in the nonprofit field or she has to be a baker. Has to be one of those two.
Right. She has to run her own bakery. Like, lots it has to bakers. Be something charming. Yeah.
Lots of gallery owners and curators in rom-com. Yeah. Lots of undercover journalists. Yeah.
Undercover journalist is just a great profession that doesn't exist, really.
Never been kissed.
Right.
what a creepy movie
for
that
the
I love.
Story. Also just one of the guys. But yeah, that's probably true. We've been brainwashed by romantic comedies into marrying our wives. I think we can agree on that. Right? So moving on. Oh, interrupting a wedding to say you love someone is the ultimate gesture, but just big gestures in general are a thing. Like holding the boombox over your head.
Yeah, I think it has to be conspicuous. There are big gestures that you can make that only one other person would know. And in one case, Love Actually, that's a big gesture. I guess maybe that's the only example I can think of. All the other ones are conspicuous where it's like a big gesture in front of people.
And wait, what was the one from Love Actually?
You get a show
Love Actually is the card, the hobo cards.
Oh, right. The hobo cards.
But
that's true. He does look like people thought he was homeless.
But everywhere else it has to be like, I want to announce that I love her and I don't care who knows it. And that's the ultimate romance, that a guy's actually willing to say, that's my girlfriend.
Right.
Right, exactly. And I don't care who knows it. I have a girlfriend. I hadn't realized this or remembered this until doing research for this episode, but the significance of In Your Eyes in Say Anything is that they had sex to that song for the first time, which is such a creepy thing for him to be doing. So he like basically stands outside on her front porch, like with her dad home, presumably.
And plays their fuck mix.
And plays
Remember
their fuck song. Yeah. It's like
horrible.
Really menacing. Like
twist
like,
the knife. Yeah, that's gross.
Think about that that movie with Mark Wahlberg.
It's called Fear.
Fear. That's right. That could very well be a move from that. Like if they had sex and then he like played the song that was playing, that would be like a really like menacing move.
Those stalker movies are so interesting because it's just like the reverse side of a rom-com. Whereas like you're saying, you switch the scoring and
it's
just
so
a murder
terrifying.
Movie with pratfalls.
Right. Like just standing out there being like, remember this? And presumably he played it like a few times in a row, which is probably creepy.
Right, yeah, it's just on repeat out there. Yeah, it is really interesting to think of it, romantic comedies as horror movies. We talked a little bit about Love Actually being a horror movie in which there's basically this virus that's spreading among everybody in the movie. Like, everybody is catching love, and love makes them all crazy and do terrible things and think that it's all very romantic and everything.
Really hurt each other. Yeah. There's like four marriages that break up in that movie, and it's supposed to be this amazing thing.
And their definition of love is really the shallowest possible definition of love. It's basically seeing someone that you're attracted to, and that's it. Words can't get in the way. Like, that's actually a thing across lots of romantic comedies, is you can love somebody without ever having spoken with them. Like, that movie Can't Hardly Wait, is all about that. There's a guy named Preston who's like essentially devoted his life to being in love with this girl who he's never spoken to, played by Jennifer Love Hewitt. And then in Love Actually, it's
the guy who's he goes to
a stuttering cottage. King. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Cause he's
Colin
like,
Firth.
Yeah. And he, his maid there or his assistant doesn't speak any English at all. And
right.
She
speaks
Portuguese
which is
and
the
he
most ridiculous
proposes
language.
To her.
Right. Yeah.
That's the most insane.
After he doesn't even know he likes her until he sees her wet in the pond. And then he's like, that's a real woman.
It's a lot.
Because she doesn't speak English does not mean she's not a woman. Right. He's amazing.
That was his assumption.
That was a big takeaway.
Yeah. Whoa, wait a second.
They have women in Portugal too?
Women who don't speak English have nipples?
But right, so he then finds her attractive, and his next move is to learn Portuguese so that he can propose marriage to her, which is just an insane move. It's a thing an insane person does.
Go on a date. Yeah.
That's, right. That's an 18th century move right there.
Right. And every person in the movie, that's the only type of love that works. And the type of love that like falls apart are the ones that are like actual serious relationships where like the couple's been together for a long time. They know each other well. So it's like responsible relationships are wrong, but like being in lust with someone is basically that movie's only definition of love. But somehow it gets away with being called a romantic movie.
That's like my biggest gripe with romantic comedies is that there's like this real inherent lesson that's being taught that they don't necessarily mean to teach, but it's that you want relationship in a movie to only show up at about like the third act, because otherwise you need the will they won't they, and then you get them together, and that's when all the sparks fly and it's very passionate and everything. But what you have to do at the beginning of that is sabotage some other relationship. Generally the characters start in some other relationship where things are going poorly, where like you know they're going poorly because they have a fight at the beginning. But that's every relationship. Like you're in the relationship right now that would be at the beginning of one of those movies and that is doomed for failure. And so the movies are saying basically, if you fight at all, or if you say things that you wish you could take back, or if you're like petty with one another, that relationship's doomed. When in fact, that's what a relationship is. Like, it's just like learning to deal with those types of things and coming back and apologizing for them. And like, it's awful.
I do love that, like, the wrong person who the protagonist is going to steal their partner from is always very hot, but like, looks severe. like, it's this gorgeous blonde woman, but she has an updo. And it's like, oh no, Julia Roberts has such beautiful curls. Like,
such homely
be with
curls.
Her, she's fine. Like, it's
she's in stilettos, and that's a problem.
Yeah. And they're like, look out. This woman is not marriage material.
Right. Because she puts effort into her appearance, whereas the other woman is like,
she's fun.
Right. She's fun.
I love the she's fun trope.
Right.
Look how graceful she is. She is not good. Look at that woman stuck in on a revolving door over there. That's marriage material.
She's fun.
Right. Right. And yeah, like you were saying, the things that actually come up in relationships, like not liking the same music, that's treated as like how you determine that you don't love, that someone doesn't get you in movies, right? Like, I think there's an entire John Cusack movie that is that. Like, High Fidelity, isn't it all about like him making mixes for girls and girls like liking his taste in music and like that being the main thing?
It is. Yeah. There's also a moment at the end of The Wedding Singer, I think, where she's on the plane and she says something that's important to her and he casts it off as like, all right, well, whatever. I don't care about that. Like, that's not important to me. And that's like her sign, like, this is the wrong guy.
He doesn't care. Like, one of my favorite / most hated romantic comedies, 500 Days of Summer, Joseph Gordon-Levitt basically falls in love with Zoe Deschanel, A, because that's what you do in a movie,
right?
And B, because she like listens to the Smiths on a Walkman, which is like, please kill me. That's the worst thing I've ever heard. But he's like, oh, like she's a little different, you know?
Right,
and it's
right.
just like, it's the Smiths. Everyone knows who they are.
She's heard of the Smiths?
It's 2009. Why do you have a Walkman? Like a Unabomber.
That's the same with Garden State too, where he falls in love with her as soon as he realizes that she listens to the Shins.
Right.
Jesus. I did learn who the Shins were through that movie though. Yeah. God damn it, Zach Braff.
It's a good song. By the way, we played the Smiths on last week's podcast. So.
Not that the Smiths are bad.
No, they're good.
Yeah. But everybody knows who the Smiths are.
I did introduce them as, there's this band called the Smiths that you guys have got to hear.
Great front man. He's going to go places, I think.
One of my favorite points about Love Actually, and then I swear we're going to stop talking about Love Actually.
We don't have to.
From your podcast was your guest whose name is
Deborah DiGiovanni.
Yeah, she pointed out that even the title is mansplaining.
Yeah, it's like,
Love actually is. It's like got a condescending tone.
Oh yeah.
Brett, do you like Love Actually? I feel like you turned in your seat when we started talking shit about it.
I love Love Actually.
Oh,
fuck.
Lord.
Get the fuck out of my studio. You get a minute to explain why Love Actually isn't the worst goddamn movie.
Ooh, looking forward to this.
I don't have an explanation. It's
all right.
Just
thank
what you
Brett.
Guys said
it's,
earlier.
It's a lot like Love.
Saw it when I was a young man, and I really enjoyed it. Mr. Bean, doing Mr. Bean things.
Yeah, you know, in the original script, he was supposed to be like a Cupid.
He was like some sort of angel.
Yeah, who was like making all these people fall in love, like a weird Puck from Midsummer Night's Dream. And then they were like, nah, let's cut that. But
I'm glad they did.
I can't explain it. It's a Christmas movie. It's a rom-com.
Christmas is all about unrealistic emotions like nostalgia. And sure, that's fine. Like, it's celebrating the winter solstice, and we need unrealistic emotions to get us through the worst, longest part of the year. So in that respect, it being the most unrealistic romantic comedy, I guess, fits, like, that they would mash that together with a Christmas movie. But
Christmas rom-coms are interesting, too. Like, I love The Holiday.
Really?
Great. It's a bad movie, but I really love it.
Oh, really? I've never seen it.
That's Jack Black and Kate Winslet. And Cameron Diaz.
And Jude Law. The best part is, so it's a very simple thing. The title betrays the entire plot. Is Cameron Diaz goes to Kate Winslet's house for Christmas. Kate Winslet goes to Cameron Diaz's house for Christmas. And then Cameron Diaz and Jude Law just have so much sex right away. And at the end, they're like, and we're in love. And then Kate Winslet and Jack Black have this very slow burn because, like, Jack Black's not a 10 conventionally, so they can't have sex right away.
Right.
And then at the end...
Can't have sex with a fat guy. Come on.
Right. But at the end, Cameron Diaz and Jude Law have had sex maybe 400 times, and Jack Black gets this light kiss on the mouth, and then, like, the movie's over. It's tragic.
It's like the Disney rules for, like, Quasimodo. Like, come on, Uggo, you're not actually gonna get the girl, but she's gonna like hold your hand during this song, so be happy with that, asshole. That's amazing. That sounds like a porno more than anything, but
it does feel very much like it could be a porn, and like the circumstances in which they get into love in that movie are like, it's very contrived to like get them in. It is a lot of falling into one another, and like there's a scene in it where the Santa Ana winds play an important role, where Kate Winslet gets something in her eye and Jack Black helps her get it out. And then she's like, wow, that was an intimate moment.
In
like
about an hour, I'm going to kiss you lightly on the lips.
So hard.
I don't blame you. We got carried away. I can't hold on to an empty space.
Now you've found a new star to orbit. It could be love. I think you're too soon to call us old. When and where did we go cold? I thought I had you on hold.
Hey guys, we're listening to On Hold by The XX, which is off their newest album that I think drops any day now, and which is yet another song about a type of relationship that movies don't dare talk about, the type of relationship that has been going on that you thought would always be there kind of in the background and that you took for granted and then one day turned around and sort of had evaporated on you. I really like the Hall & Oates vocal sample that they use in the chorus. I'm pretty excited for this album because Jamie XX apparently is allowing himself to use vocal samples and just a bunch of the things that he learned from his album from a couple years ago that had one of my all-time favorite songs, Gosh, on it. Gosh is the name of the song, not me just being overwhelmed in an old-timey way by Jamie XX's work. Anyways, hope you enjoy this song while you enjoy these words from our sponsors.
I thought I had you. We'll be right back.
Hey guys, this week's Crack Podcast is sponsored by Casper, the award-winning, American-made mattress sold directly to customers so you don't have to risk ruining your relationship by going mattress shopping at a department store or IKEA. God, fucking IKEA. Casper believes the mattress buying process should be quick and easy, and that you should be able to do things like, I don't know, sleep on the mattress before you decide if you want to sleep on it for the rest of your life. Crazy idea. Maybe when you spend a third of your life sleeping on something, you shouldn't test out the model that everyone else in the mall tried first. Casper gives you a 100-night risk-free trial. That's a little over 3 months. And if you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund you everything. And on top of that, they've got a great deal for Cracked listeners. If you go to casper.com/cracked and use Cracked at checkout, you can get $50 off any mattress in addition to free shipping both ways in the U.S. and Canada. So start sleeping better today and go to casper.com/cracked and use Cracked at checkout for $50 off any mattress. Today's episode of the Cracked Podcast is sponsored by Blue Apron, the company that sends you 3 incredible meals a week and makes you feel good about your environmental footprint while they're at it. All the ingredients are sustainably sourced, from the seafood to the free-range chicken and the humanely sourced beef. And because Blue Apron ships the exact amount of each ingredient that you need for a recipe, they're reducing the amount of food waste. So if you need like a pinch of paprika, they give you a pinch of paprika. You don't have to go out, buy a bottle of paprika that will just sit in your pantry until you move or die. It says here to remind listeners of their inevitable mortality. So glad I got that out of the way. Anyway, some of the meals they have prepared for January are seared pork chops with farro and cranberry chutney. That's one. Spaghetti squash and marinara with mushrooms and garlic knots for you vegetarians. And they also have spicy shrimp and Korean rice cakes. So check out this week's menu. Get your first 3 meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/crack. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. Again, that's blueapron.com/cracked. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Just in general, I feel like the people in the couple that you're supposed to be rooting for in romantic comedies tend to be like horrible people a lot of the time, just like bad.
Yeah.
We had an episode of After Hours about this.
Like, yeah, we did.
I think we talked about My Best Friend's Wedding, like how.
Oh, yeah.
So she's a sociopath, like she's a restaurant critic, so cool job. Definitely.
She's a writer.
Right. She's just a writer who likes to help other people enjoy food. Not that she does herself. So she has had all of her 20s to decide to marry her best friend from college. They had said if by their 20th birthday they aren't married to someone, they will elope.
Which seems a bit early.
Yeah.
To be like, if I'm 28 and I'm not married, I've got to, whoever's around.
Or shoot me.
Right.
By the way, this is like, takes place in the 90s. It's not like 1942. Wow, how are we going to get rid of this spinstress, 28 and unmarried? So he calls her. She thinks he's calling to be like, let's now get married. But he's like, I'm getting married to a 20-year-old. So she goes and like tries to break up the wedding by like sending fake emails, like committing crimes. But he's like also a really shitty guy. Like he is like possessive of his friend and like gets jealous about Julia Roberts like being with other guys. And also, like, he won't let his 20-year-old girlfriend finish college, which is...
Yeah, that always bothered me. I was like, why? You know, and it's made to seem like a bad thing that she pushes back on him. Like,
it's very strange.
Sit down.
Right.
Because if she gets a degree, she'll leave him.
Yeah, too cam, too smart.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
Then they run away.
Right.
Right. Get all these ideas in their head.
Yeah.
He also, he sees his friend naked at one point and like really like lingers in the moment and is like, you look really good without your clothes on.
Yeah, that's what he says. You expect there to be like a clever line coming, and instead he says, "You look really good without clothes on." He says it like it's a good line, but it's just...
Yeah, the delivery on that line is incredible.
Right.
He made the most of it. There's... But also, it's like, in what world would that seeing your best friend naked not be like a, huh? Like a, right. That's absolutely what would happen.
Yeah. What's the movie that we were just talking about with Julia Roberts and John Cusack, that vehicle, where they're
the
Hollywood It couple.
It's America's Sweethearts.
Yeah, it's the same sort of thing in that one. Like Julia Roberts, even though she's supposed to be the protagonist in that, things that she actually does to her sister are pretty conniving and dark. First of all, she kisses her sister's boyfriend, or maybe even husband at that point.
And they sleep together.
Not while they're married, but while their relationship is still kind of on the rocks and her sister's trying to decide if she wants to be with him, she sleeps with him.
Ugh.
But she also...
It's not like, okay. Like, yeah, well, they're in a fight, so I guess I can
sleep. It doesn't count.
She sabotages her sister a lot. I mean, she's kind of an enabler for her sister. She enables the bad behavior of her sister and sabotages her behind her back frequently throughout that movie.
This is a frequent rule in rom-coms, is that gaslighting someone is like... Okay.
Very like, chill.
All's fair.
I feel like I learned all my skills from rom-com gaslighting.
Right. Because
now I'm great at it. It's like, maybe I wouldn't be. I'm going to blame it on that. Yeah.
But like, doesn't she like basically make her think that like she's being crazy for thinking that he's cheating on her or something like that?
Yeah. And that's so frequent is the you're crazy moment in a romantic comedy.
Right. How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. She gaslights the fuck out of him. Like, yeah.
Never
Been Kissed. Magazine article. Undercover magazine article.
Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, same with Never Been Kissed is just...
Just full of it. That poor teacher.
Right. And then and then she kisses a kid. That's gross.
Wait, what happens?
That moment's totally Rufus. I love that moment.
Yeah. Oof, God,
she kisses one of the kids.
Yeah,
when she goes to the high school.
How old is she supposed to be?
25.
Oh.
He's 17, generously.
Oh, that's right. Okay. It's technically legal.
Well, I guess so.
Trust me. Weird.
I haven't crunched the numbers on it.
So she goes undercover as a high school student, and then her teacher falls for her while thinking she's a high school student. Yeah, so rom-coms are just about, like, deviant sociopaths, essentially.
Right, but they're hot.
One of the Guys is one that comes to mind where somebody pretends to be somebody of the opposite sex. There's another one that did, like, it was a rehashing of Twelfth Night, I think, that Amanda Bynes was in.
Oh, she's a man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And in those, it's a really weird circumstance where the person who's switching genders falls in love with somebody who would ordinarily be a perfect fit for their heterosexual relationship, and then that person gets deeply confused. Because suddenly they're having feelings for somebody of the same sex and they didn't think that they were. And then like the solution at the end is, don't worry. You're not gay. Everything's fine.
Right.
And everyone goes, phew.
This is a deep cut, but there's a Disney Channel original movie that uses that same exact one, except way more overt. It's called Changing Lanes. And it's about like this motocross girl.
Is it Lance Bass? Is Lance Bass in that?
No,
that's
on the line,
okay.
And that's a really good one. And then Wish Upon a Star is the one Justin Timberlake is in.
Okay.
On the line is, oh boy, it's Lance Bass and Joey Fatone fighting over a girl.
The couple?
No, they're fighting over a girl.
That would be
beautiful.
But, sorry, Changing Lanes.
Changing Lanes is about this motocross girl who's like not allowed to play with the boys. And so she poses as a boy and then, you know, the hottest motocross boy thinks he's gay, but then he's not. End of movie.
And scene.
Changing Lanes.
America's Sweetheart's such a great example because John Cusack... I think John Cusack is... Like, his character was secretly, like, a murdery stalker the whole time.
Well, he
pictures killing her, like, many times. And his most famous scene is him standing outside the girl's house in a trench coat. Playing the song that they had sex to while she like is being like, I don't want to see you, leave me alone.
High Fidelity's not great either. John Cusack in general, he's so, I think it's because he's so charming. You can really get away with a lot in a John Cusack movie.
Maybe that's it, that like he is showing off how much he can look like a murderer while still being non-threatening. But generally, guys, don't try that at home. You probably can't get away with that.
Because he can be a murderer and still be charming. He did that in Gross Point Blank.
Oh, yeah, I love that
He was
movie.
An actual murderer
That's
there.
That's the one with Minnie Driver?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah. Oh, I love Minnie Driver.
Yeah, I think he always plays a murderer. And, like, just some of the movies show him committing murder. And the other ones just leave it in the deleted scene file.
Sometimes it's charming, sometimes it's not. But he's always doing... I've never seen one John Cusack movie that I would really like to see for fun is Must Love Dogs. Never saw Must Love Dogs. I think that's like an online dating movie.
Is that the
from the mid 2000s?
Yeah, you're right. The Truth About Cats and Dogs is the one that I've seen. That's the Janine Garofalo and
Uma Thurman.
Yeah, Uma Thurman is in that one. Yeah, I haven't seen Must Love Dogs.
I doubt many have, but who knows?
Do you guys think that John Cusack's name is a play on John Q. Public? Like John Q. Sack?
Whoa.
It just occurred to me. I wrote his name down, John Q. Dash Sack. All right.
Moving on.
You've
more
got
jokes.
Mail.
More.
Hey.
That's Tom and Meg, right?
Yeah, Tom and Meg. Again, a story where, like, they fall in love kind of from afar. The first one was Sleepless in Seattle, which is a classic.
Yeah. Which one has she got on the bookstore in?
You've Got Mail.
Okay. Yeah, that's the one where he knows what's going on before she does and still plays it up.
And still manipulates her like a marionette.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And then when she finally realizes it's him, he's like, you got me. I knew all along. And she's like, I was hoping it was you, which is so weird because she hated him in reality.
That's another trope that comes up an awful lot, that the male lead frustrates the female the female lead so much that she falls in love with him.
Oh, yeah. Like, there's a big element of, like, wearing her down.
There are so many scenes of just pure exasperation on her part. Just moments before they kiss, like where she's like, all right. like that's what you, when you want to start a relationship, the more that you can frustrate a woman, the more she will love you.
Yeah. And just generally, I feel like in a Breakfast Club, like the mean psychopath who Molly Ringwald falls in love with, he's like giving her harsh truths that like she like has never confronted, and like that's what makes her like him or something.
Yeah,
I feel like
the
there's
thing,
that
like
too.
Harsh truths do not make me horny for someone.
Right.
Make me upset, they make me want to go home.
Right. Yeah, well, they really blur the lines between being really upset with somebody and that meaning that you're in love with them. So like I can think of so many instances of a woman yelling at a man in a movie and him having done something so mean or so cruel to her, and her yelling and being really furious, and then him being like, I know what you need, and then leans in and kisses her, and she's into it.
Right. Yeah, we talked about that
Gerard
recently.
Butler in whatever that movie was where they're...
Phantom of the Opera. Just kidding.
Where they're newscasters together, he and...
Yeah.
I did not see that.
That blonde woman from Knocked Up... Shoot.
Oh, Katherine Heigl.
Yeah, Katherine Heigl.
Is Gerard Butler just a bad actor? Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
Has he been good in something before?
300 maybe.
But does he talk a lot in that one?
Or he
is
does,
he just
but
buff?
It screams. He's basically a cartoon in it. He's supposed to be sort of over the top.
I do love him in Phantom of the Opera, but boy, what a bad choice. He's not a good singer.
He's in Phantom of the Opera. Yeah.
He is the Phantom of the Opera.
That is surprising.
I could talk about that for hours. Anyway,
so she has a mom and pop bookstore. He runs Barnes and Noble essentially, and like puts her out of business. And like you think it's going to be like a thing where it's like she almost goes out of business, but then they like figure out a way to work together. Nope, he like puts her out of business. She's like, "Welp, I will have to move to a different apartment now because I can't afford life anymore." Also, I think she's married at the beginning of that, like in Sleepless in Seattle, she has like a boring boyfriend that's one of the Bill Paxton or Pullman.
Yeah.
And he's just boring, which is immediate grounds for, well, clearly they shouldn't be together because she is sometimes bored by his dinner conversation.
Right. See, liar, liar.
But in this case, it's she's in a relationship with Greg Kinnear and like carrying on this intimate relationship over email where she's like in love with her email pen pal. And, like, actually ask the question, is it infidelity if you're involved with somebody over email?
Is that the first time that question was asked?
Right, yeah.
To the nation?
Right.
Answer, yes.
Yeah, yes, yes it is. And only have sex with them like once in a while, just like not over email.
That was a weird thing that we decided to make a movie. Like email was a new thing and they were like, let's make a movie in which people fall in love over email. If we kept doing that with new social media platforms, if we were like, Twitter's a thing. What about a movie where people fall in love over Twitter?
There's going to be a Tinder movie. They're absolutely like those sort of things.
Swipe right, swipe left. Like some,
yeah,
it'll be called
like
that
something or... like that. There's always, for every new piece of technology, there's a really bad rom-com and there's an even worse horror movie of like manipulating. What was that movie about? Like, there was a movie about an evil GPS or something that was like,
really?
Take a left, like into a bog.
Into a bog. The scariest line in movie history, take a left into a bog. Yeah, I think there needs to be like a bit of pathos, I guess. Like Something About Mary is essentially about stalking. There's a horror movie corollary for every romantic comedy or like successful romantic comedy.
Definitely.
Sleepless in Seattle would be Play Misty for Me or whatever. That old Clint Eastwood movie that neither of you have seen is.
I just rewatched because it was on My 13, which is a digital channel I get on my television. I rewatched As Good as It Gets. And that was a movie that when it came out, I thought, this is the best movie I've ever seen.
Yeah, me too.
And rewatching it, man, does it not hold up.
No, not at all.
I don't know if that's because it became such. A lot of like the language and stuff became such a part of our cultural lexicon, but like from being more woke, I would say in 2016 and watching it, it's pretty brutal. The scene that everybody remembers of him saying, "You make me want to be a better man," mm-hmm. when he's trying to get her not to leave the table. Immediately after that moment, she moves closer to him and says, "If you ask me, I'll say yes." Like she does not like him. She hates this man. She right. barely agreed to go on this thing. And even on the trip, he's been a complete dick. And then in this moment, he says, "You make me want to be a better man." And she's like, "If you ask me, I'll sleep with you."
Really?
Yeah. And instead, he gets flustered and asks her to sleep with Greg Kinnear. And she gets mad again. But like, watch Helen Hunt turn in that moment is really, really tough to watch now.
It's bad. Yeah, it's bad. I love J-Lo rom-coms. They're
Made in Manhattan.
Made in Manhattan is the most amazing movie ever made. I've seen it so many times. The Wedding Planner, unbelievable. Yeah. But in almost every J-Lo rom-com, it's always a very like a Cinderella-y kind of story where someone falls in love with her, but she's like the help. In Made in Manhattan, I forget who it is. It might be Hugh Grant. And then in The Wedding Planner is Matthew McConaughey, which is great. That has the best meet cute ever. And then I think the one she's in with Jane Fonda, Monster in Law, I'm pretty sure that's yeah. in a similar setup. It's like all of her movies are, you know, it's just like a white dude is like, you know, I know you're working class, but I'm not going to be an asshole to you. And she's like, time to get married.
I hooked one.
Right.
I feel like J-Lo rom-coms are the rom-com equivalent of Steven Seagal action movies. You have
hot
the...
take.
You have like the job. It's like, I'm just a chef. I'm just a just a wedding planner. Just an innocent wedding planner.
That.
What do you?
That's actually a really good point. In romantic comedies, you can't be the person looking for love. If you are looking for love, you're doomed never to find it, or there's something inherently
wrong
with you.
Except for Bridget Jones.
Yeah, that's true.
Bridget Jones is looking hard.
In most cases, I would say that it's a sign in the movie that you're too needy. It's when love falls in your lap. That's when you know that it's real.
Well, because the rule is you have to be selfless. No movie demands that guys be environmentalists or something, except Steven Seagal movies that are written by Steven Seagal for himself, where he's like, I'm the environmental sheriff.
On Deadly Ground.
Yeah, he's on Deadly Ground. It's like the one movie that he got to like conceive himself. And he's like, I fight for the environment and for native peoples. Yeah. But yeah, rom-coms, the girl has to be fun and not even thinking about it and not taking it seriously when love like hits her.
Or like Stone Cold Bitch Sandra Bullock 2 weeks notice style. Like it can't be in the middle. Because in Miss Congeniality... Sandra Bullock is like, you know, she doesn't wear a lot of makeup and she's good at her job. And they're like, we don't like this. Time to make you hot so you can hook up with Benjamin Bratt.
There's a thing called the, I think Nietzsche wrote it maybe. It's The Birth of Tragedy. And it's like, you sit in the middle and on one side is the Apollonian. That's like order and structure. And on the other side is the Dionysian. And that's like unbridled reproduction and like sin and a visceral life. And in any sort of story, the character has to move too far in one direction for a little while and then move back to center again. And you have to have a balance of both. So like in horror movies, on one side you have like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, that's the Apollonian. And then on the other side, you've got vampires who are having these like sex parties down in underneath the ground. And everybody has to like, it's always
hell
trying
yeah.
to get
all vampire
that's
movies
yep.
to get back to the center. And I think that that's true of romantic comedies too. If she's too organized and too much involved in her job, people are like, that's, they revile that. They're
right.
like, no,
it's
get her a man.
Yeah.
She's concentrating on her job.
Have
no.
A baby.
She's got to have a man. Yeah.
Can I just say, the phrase unbridled reproduction is going to stick with me until I die. Just a woman giving limitless birth on horseback.
They're just firing
Someone's
out.
Someone's got to catch them. Like, it's, oh boy. There's teen rom-coms. Those are a fun subgenre that really messed me up. There's my two favorites were the Lizzie McGuire movie, incredible movie that's based on the incredible series. Hilary Duff does maybe 45 pratfalls in this movie, which is great. They set it up of like, why doesn't she just kiss her cute, tiny little friend, Gordo? And she's like, no, I'm going to impersonate an Italian pop star, become very famous, be exposed. People will love me anyways. And then kiss my tiny friend, Gordo, which is amazing. Because she does. She returns to center. She goes too far into being an Italian pop star.
Unbridled reproduction.
She's
fucking everybody. Yeah.
She's out of control. She's like 15. She cannot stop giving birth. And then at the end, she kisses her friend on a plane.
I like that idea. This two people in a romantic comedy where she whispers in your ear, I'm really good at birth.
Oh, I would call the police if someone said that to me.
The teen ones, I think, are probably, looking back on it, those are the ones that messed me up the most.
Yeah.
Can't Hardly Wait was a big problem for me.
Things I Hate About You.
Yeah, and the one where Freddie Prinze Jr. turns a girl pretty.
Oh,
by taking her glasses off.
Yeah, that
she's
one.
She's all that.
Well, yeah, she's
that's
all that.
That's the Princess Diaries too, basically.
I'm trying to think of some other like more mainstream teen romantic comedies, but it's always the same premise.
10 Things I Hate About You.
Yeah. It's always
Shakespeare, fucking hack.
A weird lusting from afar, and then it happens, and sometimes it happens for the wrong reason, then they end up with the best friend instead, because that's more your speed, lady.
Yeah, or... yeah, stay in your lane. Right. No changing lanes in this one.
There's one movie called In Time that I really, really like. That's a romantic comedy that I can really get behind. Bill Nye's in it.
Yeah. I'm in.
It's made by the guy who made Love Actually.
Oh, no.
Is it with Anne Hathaway?
Anne Hathaway's not in it.
Wait, does Bill Nye kiss Anne Hathaway?
Yeah, finally, those
these
two
age gaps are getting worse and worse.
It's the guy from Ex Machina, not Oscar Isaacs, the redheaded guy,
Donald Gleason.
Yeah, he's in it, and
Rachel McAdams.
Yeah, it's exactly right. Yeah,
Rachel
McAdams. It's wonderful, and it's about a guy who can travel through time. Although maybe it's because it's not really a romantic comedy. I think it may be more like a family story because he gets the girl like halfway through it, and it's set up to be a romantic comedy. But then like he succeeds, and you're like, well, where could this go?
Well, Rachel McAdams is also in The Time Traveler's Wife. She loves time travel and love. It's kind of her thing. The only thing I remember about that movie is whenever the time traveler time travels, he arrives naked.
Nice. T2 rules.
Yeah, right. I forget Terminator who the guy rules, is, which... but you see him naked a whole bunch. You see a lot of butt.
Such a weird thing that all movies agreed that like, sure, time travel exists, but you got to be naked. If you're not in a car, like your clothes are coming off. Yeah, don't be stupid. You're going to be naked. Even if you are a robot made of metal, like you can't have like metal clothes on.
Yeah, he had to
appear naked. Like that was clearly like a guy on the other side of that transaction, that time travel transaction, who was like, Yeah, yeah, you got to you got to be naked.
Oh, no, I've done the math here. You don't have to be.
No, trust me, you got to.
I can, like, pretend like I have clothes on. I'm made of liquid metal. No, you got to just take your clothes off.
You got to take them off.
Sinister.
Get in this tub.
Get in this tub.
That's Demolition Man rules, too.
Right. Yeah, yeah, Demolition Man. You can't be frozen with clothes on, man. Come on. This could get in the way of the thawing process. So, back to Love, Actually. It's also weird to me that Laura Linney and Emma Thompson both are the only two people who don't end up in love, and they're like the only close to middle-aged women in the movie. And I guess Alan Rickman, but Alan Rickman has a young woman.
He still
throwing
has a
herself,
side piece. Yeah.
Right, just throwing herself at him for no apparent reason.
R.I.P. Alan Rickman, however, why would he have a side piece? Does that make any sense?
Snape.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Everyone's favorite sex symbol. Snape. Sex symbol.
That is interesting. I didn't think about that. The middle-aged women in that are the ones who, it's too late for them.
Loud and clear, you are too old for love.
But not men. Which,
no.
Weird that it was written and directed by
Bill Nighy,
like,
is the sex symbol of that movie. The right. oldest
Which
man in the
insane.
Movie is the, like, he's supposed to be the manifestation of sexuality.
But then Laura Linney, who's like a babe, they're like, send her out on an iceberg. Like, we're done.
She's got a brother.
Yeah, it's funny that Bill Nighy is the sex symbol because the guy who wrote and directed it, like, I just, like, Google imaged him, mm-hmm. and he's just, like, an old white guy. Like, he's, like, in
oh,
his
yeah.
in his 60s. So, yeah, like, he's Bill Nighy's age.
He should go to jail, like, for what he's done.
But I feel like a lot of what we're talking about is just male fantasies of, like, how dating would go or how, like, romance would go. But I also see a lot of the misconceptions that you see, like, online from, like, young men yeah. asking about girls. For instance, the thing about why do girls like jerks, or, like, why doesn't she like me when I'm, like, really nice? I see where they get that idea, because in romantic comedies, all it takes is to like the person and have the courage to say that you like the person.
And well, be and nice, like, one time.
Right.
It's always
it.
The trope that the first time a guy is nice to you, even if he's been an asshole to you for 50 years, the first time he's like, hey, do you want a bite of my tuna sandwich? She's like, oh my God.
Right.
There's something there I just didn't see before.
Right.
Like, it's just like J-Lo falls in love with anyone who doesn't treat her like garbage in a movie.
Is that true? Treats her like a human
Pretty
being.
Much, yeah.
Treats the working force like humans.
Well, and in Love Actually, which just a collection of all of the things that are wrong with rom-coms, which is why we keep coming back to it. But the maid who Colin Firth like falls in love with, it's never even a question if she likes him. It's just he learns her language enough to propose marriage, and she's like, yeah, I guess.
Nothing more romantic than a yeah, I guess.
Yeah. Like, I mean.
But yeah, that is like that's like the most extreme version of a J-Lo rom-com.
Right.
Of just like, shrug, sure, you seem nice, and right. you're not mean to me. Which I guess is probably how a lot of marriages start, but that's real sad.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal.
But Love Actually is, I'm trying to think of other, like, ensemble rom-coms. It's just, like, those Gary Marshall movies, right? Like, the Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
And New Year's. And then there's, he's just not that into you is, I don't think, Gary Marshall, but that's another, like, movie with too many characters.
Right.
And everyone does something horrible.
Right. And I feel like those movies exist because somebody in Hollywood was like, wait, people really seem to like this Love Actually movie more than they should. And
yeah.
They're all like built on that model, which is like not a typical model. Like, none of the stories have real conflict in them or anything. It's like they have their own rules.
And I don't think it's also just online that that's happening with young men, the way they're misunderstanding how love actually works.
Right.
I was a kid once, and I remember thinking these things and thinking,
it's probably born
from this place. And you mistaking the idea that being sexually or romantically attuned to somebody, to knowing kind of what they want without asking, is very different than just having confidence and taking what you want. That those two are very different things, but movies sort of present them as the same. It's circulated all over online of alpha and beta males.
Right.
Like, everybody's, they're so fixated on it. And it's creepy, but it's born from that, I think. It's born from guys going, okay, well, what's the thing that women all want? Oh, they want confidence. Okay. So you act confident until you have it. but it's not as simple as like confidence. And like a guy grabbing a woman and kissing her, don't ever do that.
Yeah, like, that's scary, and you could be placed under citizen's arrest. And I had like the opposite experience of that. Like I have this memory of like the first time I was ever dumped in high school. All my gal pals were like, we're going to take you to see this great new movie called He's Just Not That Into You, which is a great thing to do to a crying 16-year-old girl. And they brought me, and it just like, I left feeling, I've never felt worse in my entire, like, it, because that whole movie is basically just like, the lesson of that movie is like, dumb yourself down or like, sit down, go to the top of a hill and sacrifice yourself because this is just, love is not for you. I was sitting there and I just, like, I was crying in the movie theater and my friends were like, this is fun.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I wonder if it would even be like a movie that you'd want to watch if it was somebody who was successful in love because they were emotionally intelligent. I guess the very literal and blunt version of that is what women want, where you can actually hear what they're thinking.
And their thoughts are mostly realistic, right?
Oh, like, extremely. Yeah. I was like, how did they?
Yeah.
It's like my thoughts are being projected.
I wonder if the person who started writing that movie was originally had the same thought process as me. And was like, I just want to write a character who's like emotionally intelligent and like, somebody's giving out subtle signs and you're able to read those signs. And then it just became fucking that terrible Mel Gibson movie.
A movie where the only thing women are capable of thinking when they're in a room with Mel Gibson is like how great he looks.
I think that would be the flip side of that movie is just like dissociative identity disorder where he thinks he can hear the thoughts of women who thinks he's hot.
Right. Like that's the actual realistic outcome of that movie. Right. Like yeah. Because
he's like, no, I know you're into me. I heard your thoughts.
Yeah, I guess the biggest, and I think we've talked about this before, but the biggest misconception is rom-coms make it seem like falling in love with someone is going to be conflict-filled, and there's going to be all these obstacles to falling in love, and then like once you are able to be like, I love you, to the person, that's the finish line, and then from there it's like smooth sailing, whereas like in reality, falling in love with someone is like really easy. Like people fall in love with terrible people all the time. It's like you like wake up and it's 2 months later and you've like moved in with a terrible person, but that's not from personal experience, but
2 months was it?
Yeah.
I feel like I could look through your Facebook history and figure out who that was.
Then like, you know, people actually have difficulties like after that part, but in romantic comedies, they have to like contrive all these misunderstandings or mishearing something or something to get in the way of the really super easy part.
That's a point that you've made before that has resonated with me, is that it does treat it like your entire life with somebody should be every single day you wake up and it feels like you're kissing them in the rain. Right. That's what they set up, is
right.
That this is how
swelling music,
and if it's not like that, then it's not the right person.
And that's why, like, they never show these relationships past 45 seconds. Because, of course, it's going to go wrong.
Yeah, like, that would be so exhausting if it was love. I mean, even if it didn't go wrong and that was what your life was like, you'd never get anything else done.
I'm tired.
You'd never have
any
other career. You wouldn't have a career. You wouldn't be able to do anything else.
You'd always be in a gondola in Italy.
And your poor kids. Like, if you ever have kids, like, how could you ever give them the attention that they need when here's this other person in front of you who is
constantly sprinkling
sucking
flowers
face with your hot mate?
Right. Yeah, I like your point that the only actual realistic relationships are like the dick who breaks up with Reese Witherspoon at the beginning of Legally Blonde, or
it's the relationship you have to leave at the beginning of the movie for the real story to take place. Those are the relationships we're all in. We're all the bad guys of our significant other's relationship movie.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, have you ever heard an ex talk about you? And they're just like, oh, no. Some of that is true. I was thinking about how you could make the argument that The Parent Trap starring Lindsay Lohan is a very disturbing rom-com because two Lindsay Lohans convince their parents to fall back in love. There's a pool fall. There's a mean lady who gets a mosquito bite and then she's out of the story. I like when rom-coms are directed at kids because it's just like, this is so mean to do to kids. You're actively ruining them. All the way up to he's just not that into you.
Right.
In that movie, they basically, the kids play fate for the adults. Like, they organize it so that it looks like fate for right. them to fall back in love. And that's a big theme in romantic comedies, is the idea of fate, and that two people, like, constantly meeting one another, well, this is just meant to be. But that's so short-sighted in general, that people believe in fate, because fate only benefits two people. Like, you have to be the hero of your own narrative for that to work, because somebody else yeah. is getting fucked. That's a zero-sum game.
Exactly.
Fate.
That's, like, one of my favorite 30 Rock episodes is where Liz Lemon keeps running into that British guy, Wesley
yeah.
Snipes.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, it's fate. But it's like, no, we just keep running into each other yeah. and we do not like each other.
There's
just
no
all.
Chemistry between them at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. If I think about people that I run into, like, most of the people I run into, I'm not happy to see them, or I know I have nothing to talk about with them.
Right.
So it's like, how fast can I get off this train
yeah.
kind of deal?
In that play, Hamilton, Alexander Hamilton and Burr keep running into each other.
And they fall in love.
Yeah, they fall in love and live happily ever after.
Yeah.
Right.
And especially in movies where somebody's already in a relationship and they just keep running into this other person, and it happens to be, now it's fate. Like, it's fate that this is the person that you're supposed to be with. What about that other person's fate? This is a bad situation for them. And or in a movie where, while you were sleeping, he goes into a coma. This is it's got all these weird tropes where she's watching him from afar. Peter Gallagher falls into a coma because he falls in the train tracks, I think. And then Bill Pullman, I think I'm right on that one, not Bill Paxton.
Pullman or Paxton.
Bill Pullman is his brother. And now that they're, like, spending so much time together around his bed, his, like, coma bed, they start to fall
in love. His lifeless body.
Right. And the movie treats it very much like, well, you had to be a stalker for this guy in order to find this other guy who's just right for you.
Wait, but was she, like, married to...
No, she was watching him from afar. When
she
got
into
the
hospital.
Yeah, when she got into the hospital, for some reason, she said, I'm his fiance. She got to stick around.
Because,
oh, friends and family. Only friends and family could see him. So she said, I'm his fiance. Got in there. And then the family said, well, we didn't know he had a fiance. And then she starts this elaborate lie.
But she had been stalking him prior to that
yes.
because she liked him?
Yeah.
It's
That's
so
one
funny.
Good message is if you do keep running into someone, they might be stalking you.
That's true.
Right? Yeah. Maybe it's not an accident.
It's very easy to do with social media these days, guys.
I do love in that, while you were sleeping, she basically is like, you know what I should do? I should lie to the family of some poor family and their son just went into a coma.
In their worst moment.
Time to gaslight the hell out of them.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Romantic comedies are the most awful protagonists that we get in any movie. So in that way, I guess they're, like, kind of unique, and, like, maybe, like, 100 years in the future, they'll look back on it as, like, an interesting way to, like, learn about our pathos.
Well, it feels like the movies are gaslighting us
right.
into thinking, whoa, calls coming from inside the house, gang. But, like, yeah, sort of. They're gaslighting us into being like, you could have this, and this
right.
would be dope, but it wouldn't be. It would be horrible, and
they're
someone
all,
else would be sad.
They're all really unhealthy, like,
yeah,
fantasies.
Yeah.
Like, come on, kids. Don't give up on your parents getting back together.
Exactly. Then that's what I had divorced parents. And my brother and I were like, well, maybe if we were more like the Lindsay Lohans,
right.
this would work
maybe
out.
Maybe if we had our shit together.
Right.
Who better to know
this
if a relationship
us.
Is...
like,
who better to
perfect know? Message.
Who better to know if a relationship is really dead than the children of,
than
of those
parents? The very sad right. children of yeah. a divorced couple. Yeah.
I'm so tired.
All right, that was our episode. This is Portishead's Glory Box. Pretty well-known song, or at least one you've probably heard before on TV or in commercials, but felt like it was too appropriate not to end with a woman singing out, asking for men to give her a reason to love them in this episode about a genre that rarely does that. Her voice is the voice of every Sandra Bullock character in the history of romantic comedies. Anyways, Portishead's great. You probably knew that. Really quickly, I want to read a quick section from a review of Love Actually. Not that I haven't shit on that movie enough, but I think it's actually a pretty good summary of lots of romantic comedies and how lots of romantic comedies misunderstand love. Actually, to the point that I'm starting to wonder if the title of Love Actually is ironic, since instead of trying to tell us what love is actually like, it just takes all these like bizarre rom-com tropes to their logical extremes. Anyways, the author, The Atlantic's film critic Christopher Orr, writes that Love Actually offers up at least three disturbing lessons about love. First, lesson that love is overwhelmingly a product of physical attraction and requires virtually no verbal communication or intellectual / emotional affinity of any kind. Also seems true of any love at first sight movie. This is me talking now, not Christopher Orr. Notting Hill, which I really liked, has a sort of superficial falling in love at first sight conceit. The second lesson he describes from Love Actually, that the principal barrier to consummating a relationship, mustering the nerve to say I love you, preferably with some grand gesture. And that once you manage that, you're basically on the fast track to nuptial bliss. Third and final lesson from Love Actually, that any actual obstacle to romantic fulfillment, however surmountable, is not worth the effort it would require to overcome. The primary hindrance to romantic fulfillment is merely the fear of declaring one's love. As soon as the characters in the film find the courage to say, I love you, their romantic journeys are essentially over and they go straight to the happily ever afters. Anyways, that's it. On to footnotes. We're going to link off to Jamie Loftus's Twitter. We'll link off to her really funny, very promising podcast, the Bechdel Cast. It's just started out, so get in on the ground floor. We'll link off to three episodes of our show, After Hours, the only film genre that gets you to root for the bad guys. I'll let you figure out which film genre that is. The other one's called The Nine Creepiest Things Movies Portray as Romantic and Why Romantic Comedies Are Secretly Bad for You. We'll show you the Love Actually cue card scene and link off to it in the comments, as well as the train wreck dance climax. And finally, we'll link off to an article called The Dionysian and Apollonian in Nietzsche, The Birth of Tragedy, which kind of describes the thing Soren was describing at the end and fleshes that out a little bit. Oh, I almost forgot, our live show is this coming Saturday, January 14th at 7 p.m. at UCB Sunset. Dan O'Brien is going to co-host with me, and Karen Kilgariff and Georgia Hardstark from My Favorite Murder are the guests for more creepy murder talk. Tickets are sold out on the website, but more will be released during the week, so keep an eye on the ticket link in the description of the podcast or at sunset.ucbtheater.com. And there will also be a standby list at the door as well, so show up early. And that's going to do it. Thanks to engineer Brett, who you can follow at Brett, R-A-D-E-R, on Twitter. You can follow me at Jack_O-B-R-I-E-N. And we'll be back next week with more podcasts. Talk to you then.
friends, why not take a trip to Spontaneanation, where hours of listening pleasure await you. Hours made up of moments. Moments like these.
Guys, maybe we should put our cards on the table here.
Okay.
I feel like one or two or all of us might be, and this is going to sound weird, and please don't hate me for saying this, human killing robots.
Oh, what a relief.
I am.
Thank you so much. I am too.
Oh, I am too.
Oh my God.
I killed Roberto.
Oh my God.
And you're going to sing a solo away. Hilarious.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, that is very ironic.
Yeah, right?
Is that irony?
I think so.
Let me listen to that one song and I'll get back to you. I can do it later.
Listen to Spontaneanation with me, Paul F. Tompkins, on Earwolf, iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Adam Sachs, and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.